White System and tune in to the Pearl White System at RadioArian.com.
Welcome to a special Christmas Day edition of the Daily Nationalist. You're listening to me, Sir Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioArian.com. And of course, this has been pre-recorded, so I can take a few days off over Christmas. And we're going to be looking back over the year of 2018. Yesterday, we got to March, and there was another incident that happened in March that I didn't actually have the time to refer to. And that was Paul Golding and Jada Franson jailed. Paul Golding and Jada Franson from Britain First were jailed ostensibly for warning the public about Muslim rapists that were out on bail. Now, these Muslim rapists have now been jailed for, I believe, 14 years each. They've been found guilty of the crime that they were accused of. There was forensic evidence that proved that they were guilty, yet the Muslim rapists were allowed out on bail. They were still working in the kebab shop. Children were still going in the kebab shop where this girl had been raped by them. Paul and Jada, quite rightly, wanted to warn people about this. And apparently, Jada got the wrong house, I believe. The guy had actually moved from one house, so she got the wrong house. Okay, so that's wrong. She should have looked into she should have investigated things a little bit more. But she certainly didn't deserve to get a jail sentence for that. She was trying to do the right thing. She was trying to protect the British public. And this political persecution of Paul and Jada has continued since then. Paul was allowed out a little bit before Jada. He wasn't allowed to have anything to do with nationalists. And since Jada has come out, the authorities have told Jada that she must stay in a hotel in London and pay to stay in this hotel in London when she has a house in Northern Ireland. So, of course, she said this is ridiculous. And she disappeared from the hotel. And 2 days ago, she was arrested on a flight at Gatwick. Just before, actually, these drones held up all the flights at Gatwick, so she was lucky not to get caught up in that, really. But this persecution of Paul and Jada has continued, and all they were really trying to do was warn the British public that there was a rapist that wasn't on remand, that was working within a shop, and they have been proved right that this guy was a rapist. He has been found guilty. It was just the fact that the trial hadn't actually occurred, but the evidence was there to prove their guilt. And this is the way that the British government is treating political dissidents now. It's just jailing people left, right and centre, thinking that that's going to solve the country's problems. It's not going to solve the country's problems. It just emboldens the people that are causing the problems. Just think, if you're a Muslim rapist and you realise that anybody that exposes Muslim rapists gets sent to jail for doing so, it's like an encouragement for them to be doing what they're doing, especially if people are then prevented from criticising them for doing this. You can quite see why people say that Great Britain is enacting blasphemy laws by preventing people from criticising aspects of Islam. Because part of Sharia law is that it's unlawful, it's the death sentence in actual fact, for criticizing Islam. And a large part of the criticisms of Islam revolve around the fact that they are allowed to rape non-Muslims. In actual fact, they're encouraged to do that. because it will encourage the non-Muslims to become Muslims to protect themselves from being raped. Obviously, I don't entirely agree with Paul and Jada's policies, but I believe they have integrity and what they do comes from the heart, and they love the British people and they're trying to serve the British people in what they are doing. And it's terrible to see the persecution that they are going through and the political clampdown on their outreach. They've had their Facebook page taken off them and they had millions of likes on there and followers. And they're an official political party, Britain First. This is definite political persecution, using the race laws to try to silence them. But they were jailed back there in March, much to the disgust of Britain First supporters that were actually in the courtroom, made a lot of noise about it. We still haven't heard properly from Jada what she actually went through while she was in prison. But we can imagine that it was similar to what Tommy Robinson went through. And the pictures of Jada, when she actually came out, she did look very haggard, in the same way that Tommy did. I mean, Tommy Robinson looked like he'd lost a lot of weight where he hadn't been able to eat. He'd really been put through the ringer, being put in solitary confinement, which is a form of torture. And as I say, we have yet to hear from Jada what she went through in prison. Paul was assaulted in there. He was punched in the face. But at least he wasn't murdered. I mean, we still haven't heard what happened to the chap that was called Bunny, that was given 6 months for leaving a bacon sandwich outside a mosque, and he died in prison. He mysteriously died in prison. That was 2 or 3 years back, and the coroner's report still hasn't been made public to let us know how he actually died. Well, we also had another prominent court case that took place in April, and that was Count Dankula, the YouTuber who trained his girlfriend's dog to perform a Nazi salute. And Count Dankula is not a nationalist. This was just a joke. This was just him getting his dog to do something that he knew would shock people. And yet still, he was taken to court under the Communications Act for this, for being grossly offensive, when all it was a joke. You could say that it was a joke in bad taste, but that's all that it was. And it actually made Count Dankula into a bit of a household name. It massively increased his amount of followers, his amount of viewers. And at the time, I was of the opinion that he was really a bit of a communist and we really shouldn't support him. But after actually hearing him, I mean, he's quite a good guy. He's quite willing to talk to nationalists, willing to debate with people that are on the alt-right. He doesn't want to silence our speech at all. I believe he, over the Christmas period, he's done an interview with Millennial Woes, which I haven't yet seen. Really, I think he's not too bad, not too bad. And of course, he turned up to speak at the Free Tommy Robinson demonstrations as well, that we will eventually end up talking about in this series too. So there was definitely a clampdown on free speech this year that we hadn't seen before. And of course, we also had the Alison Chablow trials, which was again for satire, just for jokes. Apparently, we can't make jokes if they are about ethnic minorities. I mean, when you look back at British history, jokes always used to be about foreigners or about people being different. I mean, our main joke was an Englishman, a Scotsman, and an Irishman. I mean, it was a staple part of humour, is to poke gentle fun at foreigners. And nobody thought anything of it. And all Count Dankula was doing here was just getting his dog to perform a Nazi salute. I mean, dogs do wave their paws. So what he was doing was playing Hitler on the video while his dog was waving his paw. I mean, it's hardly a violent act. I mean, it pales in comparison when you think about acid attacks and stabbings and shootings and all the horrors that go on in multicultural cities. And yet our prosecution service is more interested in fining somebody for playing around with his dog. Our prosecution service really is being made a mockery of by the rest of the world. They're just laughing at Britain for what Britain is doing to its people. Also in April, we had a big barrage of information about these poor, oppressed Rohingya Muslims over in Burma. And why the British people should be interested in what's happening in Burma, I don't know. And we were told that the previous darling of the SJWs, Aung San Suu Kyi, the mixed-race female leader of Burma, apparently she suddenly turned for no reason whatsoever on these Rohingya Muslims. And then, of course, you look into the reports of it and you hear that these Rohingya Muslims, just like the Muslims everywhere else in the world, had been raping, setting fire to places, behaving like terrorists. In actual fact, they seem more like a Southeast Asian version of ISIS more than anything else. And we did a podcast with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson about this and about how rich and wealthy Burma is and how these Rohingya Muslims, again, are being used as proxies by the West. And Aung San Suu Kyi has realized that if she wants to succeed over there in Burma, she does have to be allied to the generals over there. And she's realized with these attacks by the Rohingya Muslims, the only people that could sort this out were these generals. And they're not Burmese nationals. They come from Bangladesh. Just like the invasion that we are suffering here in Europe of Muslims coming in from Middle East and from Africa, they've got the same problem over there in Burma with Muslims coming in from Bangladesh, and yet they seem to think they have a right to live in Burma. And the Burmese people say, well, no, you don't have a right to live here, especially not when you are raping, robbing and setting fire to villages. And of course, we're not told the other side of the story. Here in the West, we just get told, this is persecution of these poor Muslims. And it's still going on. Actually, it hasn't been in the news for a while, but it was particularly in the news back there in April. And we also, at this time, we were told that Bashar al-Assad had been gassing his own people again. And we were all very, very disappointed in Donald Trump when he actually fell for this nonsense, fell for this cock and bull story about children being gassed, when all we really saw was children being watered down with the hose pipe. And the actual people from the hospital themselves said that what had happened was, because there had been airstrikes going on, Syrian airstrikes on the area, a lot of dust had been blown up from that, where they were trying to remove the terrorists from the area. And the dust had caused people to be short of breath. Nothing to do with a chemical attack or anything like that. But Donald Trump appeared to fall for this nonsense, and went and bombed Syria. But he didn't actually do any real damage. He didn't kill anybody, I don't think. He just destroyed infrastructure. And it did seem to me at the time that he was actually doing the bare minimum just to please the hawks in the American establishment. But it still didn't look very good to the rest of the world who knew that this was a false flag, this was just nonsense. And it's the same playbook that they keep using over there. They keep pretending that Assad is responsible for attacks that the terrorists themselves, the Muslim terrorists themselves, have carried out. And obviously Trump is redeeming himself now by removing all the troops from Syria and half the troops from Afghanistan. And obviously, we hope and pray that he does actually carry that through, because that really will be something positive that he's finally done in his term as president. Also, in April, over here in Britain, we had all this nonsense about the Windrush generation. The Windrush was the SS boat that was taken over and recommissioned at the end of the war, and it turned up on the shores of Britain with a load of immigrants from Jamaica. And there was pressure put on the government to allow these immigrants in, which they did. Most of them ended up being unemployed. There are reports showing that they were very, very hard to get to actually do any work. They weren't as good as white people at working, and they were prone to criminality and fighting among themselves. And fast forward 70 years, and now that the country is full of illegal immigrants, the government decided that it wanted to clamp down on this. So it was telling people that didn't have a passport, didn't have any proof of British citizenship, that they would have to go back. And of course, some of these people that arrived on the Windrush, they didn't bother to get the paperwork that they needed. And they were told that they had to go back. It's really not that terrible of a problem, but it ended up with Amber Rudd having to resign. Masses of news coverage in the press saying how absolutely terrible this is, and this so-called Windrush generation, it was like they were sainted people. They started going on the television saying that how if it wasn't for them rebuilding the country after the war, we would have nothing. And as far as I'm aware, these Negroes, all they did was work as toilet attendants or work on the buses. They certainly didn't rebuild the country after the war. There really wasn't that much damage that was done to Britain after the war. And we've always been able to repair our countries ourselves. And if you just look at where they came from, which is from Jamaica, if you look at the shacks that they live in Jamaica, was that the expertise that we were expecting them to bring over to Britain? No, it wasn't. And I think the general British public got sick to the back teeth of hearing about the Windrush generation and just wondering why there is all this sympathy for them when really nobody wants them here. No white people want foreigners in our country. Instinctually, we don't want to share our space with them because we know that that will halve our own resources. Nobody was asked whether they wanted to have people coming here from Jamaica. There was lots of pushback against it, and Enoch Powell's speech about what would happen if immigration continued at the rates that it was at has all come true. Of course, this year was the anniversary of Enoch Powell's speech. There was programs about it where they rubbished him and called him a racist, but the fact is that exactly what he said was going to come true has come true. We do now have more murders in London than there are in New York. That was one of the predictions that he made. Getting back to what happened earlier in the year, then we get to May, and in May, we've had this happen before. We've had Matthew Heimbach's been refused entry into Britain. Richard Spencer's been refused entry into Britain. But in May, we had three civic nationalists that were banned entry into Britain. Brittany Pettibone, Martin Selner, and Lauren Southern. And Brittany Pettibone and Lauren Southern were journalists. Journalists were banned from entering Britain. Now, this is what we're often being told happens in China. We're being told that British journalists were refused entry to China, British journalists were refused entry to North Korea. And here we have American journalists, or American and Canadian journalists, being banned from entry into the UK. What was it that they wanted to do when they were in Britain? Well, they wanted to interview Tommy Robinson. And apparently just wanting to interview Tommy Robinson was enough to keep them in prison for 48 hours, and then deport them back. And Martin Selner was coming to Britain because he wanted to speak at Speaker's Corner, a world-renowned centre for free speech, where anybody is supposed to be able to get up on a box and speak. But apparently what he was going to say was considered too incendiary for public safety, and he was banned from coming into Britain. And this didn't make the news for quite a few days until it was forced to appear in the news. And then obviously they reported it this was far right people that were wanting to speak to terrorist encourager Tommy Robinson, whose tweets had been followed by the white far right terrorist Darren Osborne. So it wasn't portrayed truthfully in the mainstream media at all. But I do think the general public were concerned about this, about the fact that journalists are now being banned from entering our country. Also in May, we finally got to the wedding where Prince Harry married non-white actress Meghan Markle, who is now known as the Duchess of Sussex. And the wedding itself was quite a spectacle with the mother-in-law there on her own, the black mother-in-law on her own. Apparently Meghan Markle, according to her father and her brother, is a right gold digger. Apparently she drained her father of all his money. He put everything into her going to acting school so that she could pursue her dreams. And once she had done that, and once she'd got picked up by Hollywood, she's had nothing more to do with her family. And this is actually just typical Negro behavior. If you look at President Obama, when he was president, Barack Obama, he had nothing to do with his family either. His brother in Kenya was saying, well, I haven't heard from him for years. And if you look at the reports in Negroes from Negroland, which is a compilation of anthropologists' reports on the way Negroes behave in Africa, familial ties are not the same as the familial ties of white people. Once Negroes are weaned, they're pretty much just left to fend for themselves. And by the time they are adults, there's no real connection between them and their family. So I would suggest that it's only natural that Meghan Markle wouldn't really want to have much to do with her family. And it's just that white people find that a little bit unsettling, because that's not what we are used to. And that's why her father was so upset about it. Also in May, Tommy Robinson was jailed for contempt of court. Now, this was really shocking because he wasn't actually in the court. He was outside the court. He was reporting on a trial that had been already reported on by the BBC. And all he was doing was reading out what the BBC had said about the trial. And he was jailed for doing this. And he'd done his best. He'd been asking the police, is this okay? Am I okay outside of the court? I really don't want to be found in contempt of court. That's not my intent. And yet he was still jailed, and he was wrongly jailed. And it's been found at his appeal that he was wrongly jailed. And there are a lot of inconsistencies with the jailing. Why was he removed from a jail near to his family? Why was he removed to a jail with the highest percentage of Muslims in it anywhere in the country, where he had to be put into solitary confinement for his own safety? Why did that happen? Why was he given such a harsh prison sentence for a civil offence, which is contempt of court? Why wasn't he given the privileges that people have when they are in jail for a civil offence? Lots of questions that still haven't been answered about this. But the knock-on effect of Tommy Robinson being jailed was to create a united movement in Britain, a united nationalist movement that all got together to campaign for his freedom, where finally you had ethno-nationalists alongside civic nationalists united in a common aim, which was absolutely wonderful to see. And it has continued since then. And most of the people that were involved in that are now helping out UKIP and are involved with UKIP. And we saw a massive UKIP rally a couple of weeks back. I really do think we're going to see big things from UKIP in 2019, and also big things from Tommy Robinson now that he's been freed. Now that he's got money behind him, he's taking a lot of these media companies to court that slandered him. And he's also setting up his own media company, which will be like a British InfoWars, I guess, but more aimed towards the Islamification of the country. So it will be more nationalist than InfoWars ever was, because I don't think Tommy's ever been one for conspiracy theories. He's always been about exposing the Islamification of Britain. So the jailing of Tommy, although it wasn't very good for Tommy, it was very good for nationalism in Britain. Over there in America, we had the tragic results of Jacob Goodwin's trial. Jacob Goodwin was defending his group against a Negro thug with a flashlight who had just smashed an elderly white man over the head with it, causing him loads of stitches. Jacob Goodwin kicked this guy while he was on the ground. He shouldn't have kicked him while he was on the ground, but there's extenuating circumstances. He was probably fearing for his life, since the guy had this mag light that he was using as a club. And Jacob Goodwin was given 6 years for that, which is a shocking sentence when the guy had just been attacked. So that wasn't very good news from America. But we did have some good news from America. Patrick Little appeared, running for Senate. And Pat Little, I think we've interviewed him here, but I think he's great, Pat. We need people like Pat. In America, where they have free speech, we can have people like him that speak the direct, unvarnished truth about what the Jews are doing in that country. I mean, he speaks the truth about Jewish power. And I dare say, I mean, he's taking a massive risk by doing this. And he's also peaceful. I mean, his protests, he wants them to be peaceful protests. The man has integrity. He's got a lot of wit there, a lot of charm. He's very genuine. I think Pat Little is one of the best activists that we've got over there in America at the moment. Some people may say, well, he's far too extreme with some of the things that he says. But the things that he's saying, they are true. He just may be putting them in shocking words. But you can do that in America. Obviously, running a campaign like Pat Little did over here in Britain, you just couldn't do that. You just couldn't do that over here. And obviously, I mean, Pat can't blame the Jews for everything. He must understand that it's white people that actually let the Jews in. It's white traitors that worked with them. And I'm sure he understands that. I know most people understand that, but sometimes people forget that and try to place the blame entirely on the Jews for what they do. But the Jews are just acting on instincts. They're just, it's group evolutionary theory that this is the way that they will act to protect their group. They're not capable of behaving in any other way. Okay, there may be some exceptions to the rule, but they just prove the rule. And the way to deal with it is to protect yourself from the temptation to do the things that they encourage people to do. That's basically the way to deal with it. And Pat Little is dealing with it politically. He's running on a campaign of getting money from Israel and paying it back in reparations to Negroes for slavery. And he's running on a campaign of stopping the Jewish influence in America, a foreign influence, a foreign power's influence in America. Pat Little really is a breath of fresh air. It's like a reincarnation of George Lincoln Rockwell, I think. So that was great to see that happening in May. Anyway, we've gone a little bit over time now. So I'll say thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow on Boxing Day with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, hail victory, and Merry Christmas.